Okay.
Welcome, Siobhan.
Here's a... Good morning, everyone. If you can't hear me, let me know. My name is Siobhan, and I am a grateful, recovered, compulsive overeater. I am a little nervous, but I reminded myself on the way over that I'm speaking to a room full of OAs, so I have nothing to fear. And, you know, OAs are wonderful. As a matter of fact, just a quick story. I had shared with an OA a story about when I was a kid. When I was about 9 years old, I broke into a couple of houses with a neighbor kid to steal food. And in one house, I stole animal crackers, and in the other, I took a bite of a frozen waffle and an orange creamsicle. So that was only about 40 years ago, but I still remember that. But anyway, so I told this story because I think it's funny, and I thought unusual, but the OA said to me, "You only took one?" So, you know, that's the wonderful thing about OAs. And just a few basic background info. I came to OA on March 4th, 2014. I did not get abstinent immediately. My highest known weight was 214 pounds. I believe that I probably went past that, but you can judge by the picture yourself. It's a work picture, so it was not optional. I had to be in that picture. But, you know, the exact number itself doesn't really matter. I have been abstinent since May 26, 2014, so my last binge relapse was while I was in program. And the following day, I got a sponsor and began to work the program in a way that started to work for me. I'm born and bred in New Jersey. I grew up in an alcoholic household. And by that I mean, I don't mean that my parents were functional alcoholics. I mean ashtrays being thrown, I mean being sent to relatives' houses, I mean leaving the house in the middle of the night because we were leaving my father, helping my mother find bottles, my father having DTs so badly that he was prohibited from ever owning a gun, and this was in the 1970s. My mother attempting to commit suicide and being hospitalized. And I say all this for two reasons. Three reasons, really. One is, you know, I decided at the age of 14 that I wasn't going to drink anymore because I had already started to have blackouts. And because of the what I grew up with, I had an awareness that there was a very good chance that I was an alcoholic. So once I did that, I was, you know, the equivalent of stark raving sober ever since. But the thing about addiction is because I was born, I believe, with an addictive physical self or whatever it is, nature, nurture, at the end of the day, it doesn't matter. It was food that got me. So it was almost like there was no escaping it. One way or the other, it was going to get me. And even, you know, today I'm still aware of that in terms of other behaviors that I may engage in. Craziness comes in all different forms, and food is one of them. The other thing is, when I read the big book and it talks about, you know, the sort of storm that the alcoholic brings to everyone that he or she touches, I really feel that compulsive overeating is the same violent storm, except for me, it was primarily internal, which is not to say that my relationships were great. They weren't. But the abuse, what I did to myself, was just as violent as what I experienced as a child. And when I was approached about speaking here, I agreed to do it. I don't really want to, but it's service, so I'm going to. The topic was commitment to abstinence. And of course, I didn't take abstinence to mean simply following a food plan. I take it to mean a lot of things. I take it to mean recovery. And I don't know what, how this happened. I'm going to attribute it to my higher power. But I was poking around in my email for something else and came across an email that I wrote 9 months before I came to program. So I read it. And boy, oh boy, wow, what a picture it paints. Now, I'm not going to read the whole thing, but I do want to read part of it to you, okay? And, you know, the first half is resentment. That particular resentment was about 9 years old at that point. The title of my email was Wedding Bells, and it wasn't mine. So, anyway. The only part about the specifics of the resentment I would like to share is 9 years later, I say, but part of me would still love to see them both run over by a truck, okay? Resentment was my bag. So no matter how heavy, overweight I was, the weight of the resentments that I carried with me was far heavier than the fat on my frame, I will tell you that. But you know, I've always been a... I don't know how to describe it, somewhat self-aware person, although it took me an amazing amount of time to figure out I had a problem with food. I thought I just liked to eat. But what I did say, and this was 9 months before program, was this. What concerns me more is my own life. I feel very unhappy about every aspect of it, and that's not a good thing. I have been reading books on what it takes to have a long, healthy life, and I see clearly that I have none of it, and I don't know how to get it. I was talking about spirituality. I don't believe anymore, even though I know believing is one of the best things I could do for myself. I know that all this alone time is a terrible thing. My family is not the worst, but it is not the best. My younger sister is my family. My father is dying and my mother is crazy. As far as having a romantic relationship, I don't know what to think about that either. I feel too fat to even try. I could not have sex like this. But more importantly, I know my heart is not open. All of that, plus continued financial difficulties, an unhappiness with a job, my life is a wreck. And all of this has very little to do with resentment. That's old news. I do not know why I can't get my act together. It's a wonder I can function at all, really. I am afraid I find life a chore with way too little joy. I will try harder in therapy, and I will try again to lose weight. But if I don't get a lucky break or somehow find a way to turn stuff around, I'm not headed for good news. This I know. Now that email of that sad sack was written 9 months before I hit bottom. So, I hit bottom. I think I was about 209 pounds when I came into program. I had a history of yo-yoing pretty dramatically, and the arcs were getting more and more dramatic as I was getting older. And then I realized that my last arc, you know, the sort of heavy portion of that arc had been about 5 years. And the truth of the matter was, I couldn't get through a day without binging on junk food. I had to admit that I could no longer control my food. And this was a surprise to me because I was in denial for a long, long time. So the reason that I share that email is because my commitment to abstinence today is even stronger now than it was then. The reason that I am so committed is because I don't want the emotional pain that I was in. When I heard as a newcomer, it's not about the weight, I was like, yeah, okay, but how do I lose the weight? And I can swear to you that it's not about the weight, because I have been skinny and crazy, and I know now when I see, you know, what my daily, you know, never mind irritated discontent. I was depressed, I was anxiety-ridden, and I was angry as hell. So when I came into the program, and I learned that I had to believe in a higher power, this was a hard pill for me to swallow, because I was angry. I was so angry at God. I could solve the energy crisis if you could somehow hook my anger up to whatever. So this was a problem, but you know, I read the big book carefully, and it said that all you have to do is be willing to start. So I was in a lot of pain. I was very overweight, and I was feeling obedient. I was ready, okay? So in many ways, I've been very lucky, and I feel like you know, for me, if I didn't get so heavy, I never would have come to OA. I wouldn't have. So I'm grateful that I got so heavy. I really am. I mean, you know, maybe it didn't have to be so long, but whatever. So when I first came to OA, you know, I was so angry at God, I couldn't believe in God. I felt like if there was a God, you know, I said to myself, there wouldn't be tsunamis, there wouldn't be sick children. And not only that, but the truth of the matter is, I wouldn't have had such shitty parents, and I would have had more money, and I would have found a great guy, got married, and had all kinds of money, and that bastard who left me like a dirty old tissue after 14 years, he would have a terrible life and not the great life that he has now. That's what it was really about. And I had to admit that. But let me talk about what worked for me. When I came in, I was isolated. Again, I was angry. I didn't even know which end was up. So the first thing that OA gave me was a fellowship. And fellowship has been an amazing thing for me because I was very isolated. And the truth of the matter is, today, on any day of the week, if I don't want to be isolated, I can go to a meeting and meet with my fellows in Overeaters Anonymous and have someone to talk to. I have people that I can pick up that phone and talk to them. I have a support group like I've never had before. And that is an amazing thing. And I was able, at the beginning, to look at the power of, let's say, the fellowship to help me do the things that I could not do before. That was my start. And today, I am still so grateful for the fellowship. I am grateful for my sponsors. I am grateful for my friends. I am grateful for the people that I don't know yet. I am grateful for everyone. I'm grateful for your honesty. Because what the wisdom that I have been able to get from other OAs and the reinforcement, and sometimes, frankly, it's what not to do, to be perfectly honest. But I was lucky. When I came in, I had the opportunity to hear Laurie C. And he talked about he talked about all of the steps. And you know, the other thing that's interesting that I remember as a newcomer is I would hear things and I just didn't get it. And I remember going to, I think it was Region 7 convention last year, not this year, and the keynote speaker kept saying, do you want relief or do you want recovery? And I was like, what does he mean? I think both sound kind of good, but I understand now what he means. Now in terms of the, I'm keeping my eye on the time. I could talk forever and a day about both the physical and the spiritual/mental. So I'm going to try to do it evenly so that I don't cut it short. In terms of the physical, because of, and now you'll understand why I started with the story of alcoholism. I heard Laurie C. Tell his story about how he had been in program and would lose the weight and then relapse and lose the weight and then relapse and lose the weight and then relapse. And this went on for years. Until he finally figured out that he had to essentially, this is my understanding of it, was, you know, make that list of those red lights, yellow lights, green lights, and 100% abstain from those red light foods. Because once he started to eat those foods, they would trigger the physical craving, and then the whole thing would start again. So in terms of abstaining, I understood that. You know, in other words, the alcoholic cannot have not even one drink, not one sip, none, no, never, not. So I understood that, and that made a lot of sense to me. So I very quickly decided to apply that suggestion in my own recovery, and it served me very well because, for me, there is a huge physical aspect to that. Now, that being said, it wasn't like I was a genius. I was like, why is everybody talking about sugar? What is the big deal? I'm like, I like sugar. Okay, I pound the sugar, but whatever. Okay, fine. I'll try giving up the sugar and see what happens. And an amazing thing happened. So now I'm committed to that. So I guess my point is, in terms of the physical aspect of my commitment to abstinence, I commit my food every day. I know that not everyone does. I personally love committing my food every day for a couple of reasons. One, it's my first contact for the day with another OA. Two, planning, committing my food and planning my food has allowed me to eat my safe foods and enjoy them without thinking about what I'm going to eat or what I shouldn't be eating all day long. It's like, okay, Siobhan, this is the playground. This is what you can have. Enjoy. And to me, that's a wonderful thing. The other thing is, I'm a compulsive overeater. So if I'm like winging it, it's kind of a dangerous area for me personally to be. And I guess the third thing I'll say about committing my food is having done so religiously has allowed me to lose a chunk of weight. So I think that was only the first part of recovery for me. That is not the whole thing. That's not going to change who I am. Recovery does change who you are, and I am a different person today than when I walked in the door on March 4th, 2014. I would not write that email today. That's not coming from me, and I am so grateful for that. And it's not that my external circumstances have changed that much. I still have financial problems. My father, God bless him, is still dying. My mother is still crazy. And wait, I saw a frown. I meant that he's okay. He's hanging in there. So in other words, I still have my life's problems, but I deal with them differently. I feel differently about them. And a big part of that is because of the 12 steps. I've learned to look at my part in things and to try and be the person that my higher power would have me be. And that means I don't engage in the same behaviors that I used to engage in. So for example, after I had started to lose significant weight, I thought to myself, well, gee, what if this is just another diet? Because I've been on them all. And I've lost significant amounts of weight. I mean, this yo-yo thing started when I was a teenager. I've been to Jenny Craig, I've been to Weight Watchers, I've been to my own nonsense. One of the worst, I'll tell one quick diet story. I decided that I needed to lose weight because I was out in California and everybody was skinny. So I went on SlimFast for 3 months, okay? So I had three SlimFasts all day long and then this little tiny Weight Watchers for dinner. That is so insane. I mean, I did that, yeah, I lost weight, but that when I think about my poor pancreas now, I'm just like, I can't believe I did that. So, you know, I've been insane for a long, long time. And I had periods of time when I could control my food, but I was still as crazy as a hoot owl. And I want to be less crazy. You know, I don't want my life to be joyless, which is what it was before I came into program. Now, when my younger sister went to Florida, that for me was an emotional crisis. And more so than it would be, let's say, for an emotionally healthy person. And the reason for this is, you know, growing up, we had this sort of weird dynamic where it was us kids against them, meaning our parents. So I was very close with my siblings. I'm not married, so she really was my family, and I was very, very attached to her children. You know, the friends that I was choosing to associate with were not the people that I associate with today, because today I look for healthier reciprocal relationships. That's not what I had at that time. So when my sister left, she was, you know, I was closest to her. So that sent me spinning. And I can't say that I'm glad that she's gone, but I'm glad that it started me on the road to the 12 steps. And again, I read the big book right away. I gave it an attempt the first time. I've done the steps. I'm now on my third time. And every time I do it, it's different. And I get so much more out of it. And now I can look at my own personal behaviors and see what has changed. How I'm behaving differently because of my step work, and I am so, so grateful for that. When I first came into OA, I knew that I had to engage in service. In the beginning, that service could be something like, would be just go, you know, I went to a lot of meetings. I knew from AA, you're supposed to go to 90 meetings in 90 days. So I didn't go to 90 meetings in 90 days, but I went to a lot of meetings. And again, when I heard Lori C. speak, who had, I think, nine, I don't know how many years of recovery at that point. He said he went to two meetings a week. And I was, so I thought to myself, well, if he's going to two, then I'm going to go to more than two because I need to recover. Lost track of my mind here. So anyhow, so service and spreading the word of Overeaters Anonymous is something that is very important to me. I'm working harder now in program, even though I'm not interested in losing another pound. I could care less. It's not about that. And you know, the thing about OA is, you know, the promises that are on, which page is it? You know, the promises.
83.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, the promises on page 83, they really do come true. It is not an exaggeration. It may not happen overnight, but it really does. It really does happen. So for example, I'll give you a quick little story about how the promises happen. Unfortunately, my mother has been diagnosed with terminal cancer, which is a very difficult thing. We all face loss, you know, but this is my mother. And my impulse was to engage in behaviors whereby I would try to control my parents in terms of what they did about their treatment, control my sisters in terms of their participation and what they should be doing, what I thought that they should be doing for my mother right now. And they weren't listening to me, which I don't know why. And it was making me crazy because obviously the stakes are high. I love my mother. I want her to live as long as possible. And I had to, as I became more recovered, I had to look at this differently. I had to accept the fact that I can't control my mother. I can't make her do what I want to do. I can only control myself. And so what I said to my mother was directly to her rather than going, you know, around her by talking to all my siblings, you know, directly to the person. Whoa, that's crazy. And I said, Mom, you know, I wish you would do this, but the choice is up to you. And so she went on for about a half an hour about how she was going to do the other thing or whatever. And I said, okay, you know, it's, I wish you would do this, but the choice is up to you. That's it. Okay. And it was easier for me to take. It's easier for me to deal with the situation. It's easier for me to deal from a place of love and acceptance with my mother in whatever time she has left. Now, the happiest side in that little situation is she actually did what I wanted her to do. And I'm not saying that that's, you know, I had anything to do with that. I didn't. But it worked out nicely. Maybe that was higher power. And in terms of higher power, you know, the big book talks about it being, you know, it's amazing what can happen with what starts as a flimsy read. And my relationship with my higher power was definitely a flimsy read. And it's not even where I want it to be today, but it's a lot better. You know, God was definitely on my resentment list, so the first time. So, you know, it doesn't happen overnight, but it's a process. And I think I think they use the word, you know, what a tall order or what drastic, whatever. And it is. It's a lot of work. It's a lot of work, but it's definitely worth it. Because I'll tell you another little secret about myself. When I was at work, I used to go into the ladies' room sometimes and close the door so I could just lower my head because I was so depressed and exhausted and ashamed and unhappy. And I just needed a minute to just not pretend otherwise. And now, when I go to the ladies' room, sometimes I do a little dance when I close the door. I don't know why I do that, but it's true. I'm changed. I'm a different person. Does that affect my life either here or there? No, it doesn't, and it's kind of silly. I don't know why I do it, but I do. So, but it's just another piece of evidence that I am not the same person that I was. And I attribute it all to program. You know, I was in therapy for years and years and years. I was not an unself-aware person. But the self-knowledge availed me zero, zip, nada. I was lucky when I came in that I was ready. I was desperate, and I was obedient, and you know, it works. You know, the other thing is, food is a subtle foe. It's sneaky as hell. The other day, I happened to mention to another OA, not even my sponsor, because it wasn't on my radar. Every once a week or every 2 weeks or so, I would go out with my coworkers and get a salad at this salad place called Just Salad. And so I got the salad, and they sprinkled a little cran raisins on it. And I was telling her how great it was, and she said, "Cran raisins?" I was like, "What?" So I Googled them, and I was like, "Oh, shit. Little nutritional value, ton of sugar. Those are out. Those are now on the red list." If I didn't have recovery, I would have said, "Well, it's only a little bit. It's a salad. What the hell? I got to be in the world, don't I? Like, that's crazy. What are you, a food Nazi?" No. I didn't do that. I looked at the food. I saw, wow, there's a ton of sugar in that shit. No wonder I liked it. So, you know, it's sneaky. It's subtle. And I always have to be on the lookout. And now, because I have some recovery, I'm like, okay, that's on the red list now. That's out. So I just wanted to say, I guess, in closing, that I am grateful to be here today. And, you know, anything that I have to say, you know, I've just stolen like mad since I've been here. I listen to people who have recovery. I listen to the old timers. I try to expose myself. I listen, I suck it in, I steal it. So if there's anything that I can possibly give you, please steal it. If there's any question I can answer, please ask it. Ask me the hard one. You know, I'm happy to do it. So I think I'm just about out of time.
Would you like to conduct the questions and comments? Go on for the next 10 minutes.
Sure. Okay.
Thank you. Thank you.